With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Yo, what up? Welcome to another episode of the Oakland Warriors podcast. I'm Patrick, and once again, I'm joined by my good friend, Professor Srini Vasan. I figure I gotta introduce his professor because
that's my nickname from my power forward days.
really, they call
you the professor? posting up and throwing elbows.
Oh man. Oh, dude, I could imagine you
without meaning to all this, but yeah.
You got you're lanky, you got those long arms and those sharp elbows, man.
Like not a lot of mass though. I'm not Jonathan Kuminga.
Awesome. So we just watched the Warriors kind of whoop the Brooklyn Nets, and that was like one of the funnest games of the season. Probably might be the funnest up there with that opening night Lakers game. What did you think, man? Like, I'm still processing. The game just ended. Give me your impressions, your thoughts.
I mean, the game really transitioned, you know, into the second quarter because the Warriors' defense really just exerted itself on the Nets. And the Nets, quite honestly, like, had no answers eventually, especially when we got into the third quarter defensively. I don't think the Nets are a very strong defensive team. In fact, the commentators commonly referred to a couple times referred to Blake Griffin as the Nets' best defender, and I was like, oh yeah. This is the guy we try to get switches onto. So I mean, you know, KD showed his firepower in the, you know, in the first quarter. The Warriors figured out some good methods of defending him. You know, they kept changing their defensive rotations. Harden milked his way to some points. You know, I always dislike giving up points in any way at all to Harden. He got a lot of free throws.
Yeah.
But the Warriors just exerted themselves, the motion offense and the switching defense. And they're deep. I mean, they were just much deeper. They blew the Nets away even in the first half. You know, they came out of the first half only up like, I don't know, five or something. But they blew them away on the bench scoring. And so that was a great sign. And Curry also, I mean, it's strange to not even that's not even like the big story. He was just totally insane today. He was insane.
Curry, he played 29 minutes. He was 12 for 19, 9 for 14 from 3, 7 boards, 5 assists, plus 16, 37 points. I mean, that's insane. This game was like the opposite of the previous game against the Hornets, where all of a sudden no one on the Warriors could shoot, and that quote-unquote deep bench that we've been talking about this whole season was gone. I mean, I don't think anybody, any reasonable person panicked about it, but like they all just came out and it was crazy. I couldn't believe like how many different dudes were contributing at different points in the game. Jordan Poole had his moments. Andrew Wiggins saved the first half in a lot of ways. He hit that three-pointer at the buzzer, was fascinating to me because how many games has Andrew Wiggins had like this in his career? Maybe like a handful, you know, like where it was like high pressure on a good team. You know, a couple of them were last year in the play-in round, and then maybe in the playoffs at one time with the Timberwolves. But outside of this, this is his first experience with this. And I'm hoping, because this is like the third game in a row where he has exerted himself fourth game, if you include the Wolves game. So hopefully this kind of continues a little bit more.
I mean, it looked like he was attacking the basket and he was taking, I mean, he's extremely like just sleek, you know, I mean, he's really fast and bouncy and he has long arms. I mean, he has the physical attributes. I was listening to Curry being interviewed by the TNT guys after the game, and Curry literally said that he can be the best player on the floor at any given time. And that he's capable of doing that. It's a matter of him like choosing to kind of the way Curry actually described it was insightful, because often, you know, we, the fans, talk about it as like, he's not maybe motivated. He needs to try harder, needs to push it harder. Curry said he needs to keep his confidence up. So I think when Wiggins is confident, he believes his athleticism and his skills can overwhelm other players, and that happens very rarely, right? But right. we saw it today. Wiggins' performance in the second quarter is what changed the game and put us ahead going into halftime, and then we just smoked them in the third quarter.
Yeah, and it was one of those games where, I don't know about you, but when I was watching, even when the Warriors were up by 12 and then 15, I didn't realize it. Like, I looked at the score and I just felt maybe because of the tension and that Warriors fandom, that longtime fandom where you're like, oh, this game is always within reach. It's going to collapse at any moment. But once they got that lead, they never relinquished it. And that's got to scare the hell out of the rest of the league, because you can say, sure, right, that the Nets didn't have Joe Harris, Kyrie Irving, but don't tell me that, you know, I'll take Klay Thompson and James Wiseman over both those dudes.
You got to give Kerr credit also. Like, even early in the fourth, you know, the Nets made, like, without KD and Harden on the floor, the Nets made a minor run. It was like a 4-0 run or 5-0 run or something. Kerr immediately called timeout, reset his offensive scheme, and then after that, Curry hit a wide-open three-pointer. And then it was back to 21, and we just kind of pushed out from there, right? Then it just sort of oscillated between, like, 21 and 28 till garbage time.
Yeah, and this was one of those games where Kerr's new rotations were actually really helpful, because Steph, he got the fourth foul and he sat the rest of the third. He never came back. But then, as recent rotations have been, he started the fourth quarter when Durant and Harden were sitting on the bench. And that's bad news for the Nets. And I was really, really impressed, because when Curry went out with his fourth foul, it was like, well, this is where the run is going to happen. But yeah. Hey, guess what? The Warriors, as the theme is for the season, they have real NBA players on the bench this year, on the roster, and they sustained.
I mean, yeah, man, exactly. That was when Wiggins and Otto Porter also played really well there. He played really well right at that point. That was the key transition point, because, you know, we saw – I don't know. It was basically like the Warriors really showed that they had enough depth and had enough like supplementary scoring. In the first quarter, and you know, when we were down 9 or so, I think at the max, I was concerned because I didn't know who was going to give us dependable scoring outside of Curry. And that's what we saw in the last game as well, against Charlotte. And then the depth showed up. I mean, a bunch of players stepped up.
I was worried too, because at the outset, I was like, we need either Damian Lee, Otto Porter Jr., or Bielitsa to give us some points, you know, to give us some quality minutes. And nobody was hitting threes amongst those dudes in the first half, but at least Otto Porter Jr. was getting some twos. He was active in the lane and he was doing things. And then, yeah, this team showed its depth. And as good as the Nets are, the Warriors roster is a little bit more built for these veteran, you know, like these... The younger teams that are, I keep saying, that are unafraid and super athletic can give our bench problems, of course, especially with Otto Porter Jr. and Bielitsa, who I would pay money to see those dudes like run a race to see who would win.
Porter sort of like bounds. He has like a long stride because he's really long. So he covers ground, but his, you know, RPMs don't seem to be that great. But, you know, Damian Lee, I mean, he played well in the fourth quarter, especially, and a little bit in the third. But Lee was struggling in the first half, and Bielitsa has been in a slump. So it's like, it was really impressive to see that, you know, even that happening, because both of them have been dependable players, especially Lee earlier in the year before he just went out for that game.
Yeah.
You know, just seeing that other players could step up, a bunch of players. I mean, Iguodala played really well too. Green hit an open three. Green was taking that shot. That was a big pump up moment when he hit that three in the third quarter. I mean, he pumps you up. But yeah.
that must have been painful for the Nets. I mean, looking at the stat sheet, it's like Draymond, 29 minutes, same as Curry, 5 for 6.
Wow.
8 assists, 6 boards, plus 17, 11 points.
Money.
Wiggins had 19. Poole had 17. I mean, the starters came through. And no one from the bench had more than 7, which is what Jonathan Kuminga had. But overall, it felt like a really, really deep team effort. And you love to see it. I'm super excited about about this.
It shows me that they were able to refocus after the transition game, you know, at Charlotte, right, in the last game. I was impressed. I mean, I know we were like texting about it, and I thought there was a 40% chance. I'm a Debbie Downer. I was. I learned my lesson, man. I mean, I'm so like, I mean, I give them a lot of credit for being able to refocus, you know, play this game in Brooklyn. It was also so weird. The Brooklyn crowd was cheering Curry on. It felt like a lot of the Brooklyn crowd was just cheering like our fun motion, like high wheeling. Like also the pace was so fast, and the Warriors play so well at pace.
Right. I noticed that too. And I, at the outset, I appreciated the Brooklyn crowd because it looked like they got there on time and they were very enthusiastic. They weren't late and they weren't just kind of sitting there on their hands and just waiting for their team to get ahead. But we also know too that, you know, Brooklyn is just a place where people from all over the country live at this point. It's not like, you know, people are going to games. So yeah, during stoppages in play, I would kind of try to look in the crowd, look for like, you know, some royal blue colors.
Yeah,
and stuff.
I was
and
too.
there were a bunch of them, and Curry just puts on a good show, man. This was reminiscent of like, obviously not as crazy as his 54-point game at the Garden way back when, but it had that vibe of people wanting to see what Curry does. And that dude never disappoints. I want to ask you about everybody's favorite guy, Jonathan Kuminga, the man of the hour, because I've talked about him a lot in the past several days since he got into the rotation. And I want to get your impression, because I've been talking about him since the G League, and I had hoped, you know, I was like, oh my gosh, if we get Jonathan Kuminga in the draft, that would be amazing. And when the rumors were saying he was going to fall to 7, potentially, I was like, oh, hell no. And and we're seeing what a lot of people had talked about beforehand, you know? So what are your thoughts on him?
I mean, no question, like a star potential, like in the sense that like his explosiveness when he has the ball and he's near the basket and he's kind of his momentum is moving toward the basket. He's so explosive. He's got such hops and he's so strong at the same time. And so in that sense, he's extremely effective. He's also a much better defender than he looked to be during the preseason, you know, the summer league. He was out for the preseason, but like, it's really impressive. I think a couple shot blocks there, or at least really good high level contest. He just looks like an explosive motion offense player. He's just got to figure out, first of all, they've got to figure out how to like get him the ball moving toward the basket. I mean, I think Draymond's kind of figuring that out right now. They tried to throw a couple lobs to him that were a little too high, but I think they're kind of calibrating how to play with him. Jordan Poole, and it was garbage time, but looked like he was struggling and like not really giving him the ball. But it was just garbage time. He was just playing like, I don't know, he was hogging the ball a little. But I'd like to see those guys work together, right? Just like Wiseman and Poole. Poole and Kuminga would be good. These are important rotations, you know, when Curry's not in the floor.
Yeah. What I love about Kuminga is, I don't know if you caught any of him in the G League last year playing for the Ignite.
No.
He looked amazing in the first game. That's the one where he swatted Jordan Poole so badly. It was like the biggest block I've ever seen on a fast break drive, and Poole fell to the ground and I was like, oh man. And it's funny to me that they're teammates. Maybe that's why he doesn't pass him the ball.
he's a weapon, right? I mean, we have that potential. I mean, a two-way player potential, two-way star player potential. Yeah. So like a Giannis or a Kawhi, like a two-way player, that obviously those, or Paul George, those would be like the places we could go here. You know, it's so exciting.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the Kawhi comp has been with Kuminga for a little bit, I think. And it's totally understandable to me that like his defense in the summer league was, you know, subpar. Who plays defense really? But I mean, that block he had on Harden.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about. That was amazing.
And just the little things. He knows what to do with the ball. Like, he can make things happen. There was that play where he drove, I think, Cam Thomas, the LSU, the short dude, was guarding him, and he cut, and he dropped the ball, fumbled it, but then he got, a dunk out of it or something. Right. And he has such good body control. He has that thing where he goes up and he clutches and then he can lay it up off the glass. He's done that, you know, a few times so far. I've seen it in his other games in the off season in the summer league. And it's crazy, man. Like, he was guarding Harden. He was guarding Cam Thomas. He was guarding all the small dudes. And then when he would switch, he could body up on the big dudes. I mean, he's really, really strong. And then he hit Andrew Wiggins. I mean, it was almost garbage time, but he, on a loose ball, he got in the backcourt and he looked up and he hit Andrew Wiggins on at least half court pass, maybe a little bit farther than that. And it's like, okay, I mean, that may not seem like much, but the fact that he can do all these things is impressive to me.
And that he's already doing it, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact that he's already doing it, remember he had an injury, right? So he was out in the preseason. And the fact he's clearly playing well in practice because Kerr has moved him up in the rotation. I mean, again, at the beginning of the year, if you listen to a lot of, like, you know, obviously a lot of prognostication there that was off, including my own, I didn't realize we'd be this good this early. I thought we had the potential to be like this later in the year with Clay back. The prognostication was that he and Moody would, you know, especially him, would be in the G League most of the year or part of the year, or would start there. Now he's playing meaningful rotation minutes already, and that's likely to increase. So, you know, Curry in the post-game interview with TNT just kept talking about how they're 13 deep. And he said, and he just kept referring to the depth as something that is like a huge strength.
I missed that interview. Did he include Clay and Wiseman in that?
He said without Clay and Wiseman, we have 13 deep.
That's 15, man.
Like, cause who's our 13th player right now? Like, who is it?
You know, JTA? Right now, JTA.
Wow.
JTA. It's interesting, man. Like, in the preseason, I did an episode with my friend Vubang, and he had this idea of like how to rank the Warriors players, because he's like, hey, if JTA is like your eighth best player, you're not going to be in the playoffs. You're not going to be very good. And so we each figured out where we would rank everybody. And in his mind, if JTA was like the 13th best player, I said 11th, but he said 13th. He said 13th, I think. And then that would mean that the Warriors were actually going to be really good. And that's right now where he probably is. He gets in the game last, in all honesty.
He might end up being like the 14th or 15th best player when Clay and Wiseman come back. He should be, right? So it's incredible. I mean, all this, you know, there's so many players who are producing, and we haven't even mentioned Gary Payton,
the second GP2.
He just kept deflecting balls all game. I mean, his timing with his hand motions it's like he does, you know, hands combat or something.
Yeah, it's like uncanny. It's sometimes you think it's luck, but he does it so often, you know, because, you know, whenever anybody plays basketball, you go for a steal and sometimes you get it, sometimes you don't. But it feels like he has it down to a science, the way Andre has those strips when people bring the ball down, right? Like that he always does. And what I love, and I'm going to love this, especially since the Warriors are now on the road a little bit after that long homestand. It's fun hearing crowds, particularly like, you know, this active, engaged Brooklyn crowd, react to Gary Payton's dunks, because it's cool to hear them be like, whoa, you know, because no one expects that. You know, you don't know this kid. If you know Gary Payton and you know this is his kid, you're not expecting to dunk, right? Gary Payton couldn't dunk. He could barely dunk, you know, one-handed maybe at best when he was young. And I find that really entertaining. And we hear people talk about like, oh, what's going to happen to the rotation when Clay and Wiseman come back. I mean, that's an amazing problem to have, and I can't wait to see how they figure it out. But it's clear that, you know, there's certain guys who are going to lose their minutes. And, you know, that includes Damian Lee. JTA has already lost a bunch of minutes, and we'll see where everybody else fits in. Looney might lose some minutes. Hey, the thing about Wiseman is like, he just has to not be a liability on defense.
Exactly. I mean, that's the main thing. He has to just go for the dunker spot, the JaVale McGee kind of role, and just kind of be good at positioning himself on defense. and jump up. Don't lean down on people or crash down on people, which is sad. You know, I want to blame him for his injury, but
yeah.
You know, he would collide with people a lot last year. He was kind of a little shaky when he jumped.
Right. And yeah, definitely no fouls and being on top of your assignment and everything. And that's obviously the one thing that Looney does great. And that's why he plays. That's why he's in the lineup. So hopefully Wiseman can, I mean, we don't know what we're getting. And that's why, you know, we're talking, we're like, oh, there's a 40% chance the Warriors might win this game. It's because like, we feel good, but we haven't really seen them go through the league once. And now as we're starting to see it, it's like, okay, this is real. You know,
the main reason I felt that was just Durant, you know, going off against the Warriors, being motivated. But, they took care of us plenty last year. The Nets, yeah. I remember that first game of the season. You know, this was nice payback for that last year.
Yeah. And,
you know, I think it's also that the main concern I had, like, after the Charlotte game was who is the dependable second scorer, you know? And, mm-hmm. I mean, because Poole can be up and down. Wiggins can be a little passive, right? Some of these other guys may not hit their outside shots, like, you know, Lee and Porter and all these guys, right? So it's that possibility. But our motion offense was so effective today. Brooklyn didn't play great D either.
No.
That we had a lot of open just looks at the basket, open cuts to the basket, open layups, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think that the nature of our offense is such where there should be movement. You know, there'll be cutting toward the basket and open shooters. The question is we just need enough people. Since we are so deep, we can just keep figuring out who can hit the shot and keep them in the game, right?
Exactly.
It's all these guys have shown they can.
That's what they tried in Charlotte, but nobody actually stepped up.
The NHL season is underway, and DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, has an unbelievable offer to celebrate the greatest sport on ice. New customers can bet just $1 on any NHL game and win $100 in free bets if either team scores a goal. Doesn't matter if it's a one-time clapper or a deft deflection, however they light the lamp, you win. If Sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, DraftKings won't leave you empty-handed. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes all season long with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Sports Contests. DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now, use promo code TBPN, throw down $1 on any NHL game, and win 100 in free bets if either team scores a goal. This week, one puck in the net nets you a big win with promo code TBPN at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only, new customers only, minimum $5 deposit and $1 wager required. One per customer, restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
You're listening to the Oakland Warriors podcast. Do you know Oakland Warriors is a website too? OaklandWarriors.com offers a collection of Warriors t-shirts that are comfy, classy, and cool. Fit for a real Warriors fan like you. Forget basic tees and boring designs. With Oakland Warriors, you can show your team pride with those in the know. I have a shirt from OaklandWarriors.com. It's comfy and soft, and it reps the Dubs in a low-key but fun way. Don't believe me? Check out OaklandWarriors.com and use the code PODCAST at checkout for a 10% discount.
The thing that I love about Kuminga and Wiseman, and regardless of how much they play, like in the first half of the season, they're going to play definitely in the second half a lot more. And this is a component that the Warriors have long been missing. It's why I was so excited about drafting Wiseman last year, like that big, physical, quick, young, athletic guy. And now we legitimately have two of them, you know?
Yeah.
Like for James Wiseman being the second pick and Kuminga being the seventh in this past draft, we all know it was a much deeper draft than Wiseman's draft. And you could make the argument that Kuminga would have been drafted before Wiseman easily if they were in the same draft class. And the crazy thing about Kuminga is he reclassified. He would be a freshman right now, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And that dude has a crazy story, man. And like his level of maturity seemingly on the court is pretty clear. And I love that. I love that he must be taking all the development coaching, you know, and listening. I
mean, and also that he's okay. And, you know, Wiseman is going to be okay with the role that these guys have. which is they're on an advanced team. They're on a championship contending team. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not going to get played the same kind of minutes as Anthony Edwards, who's, you know, shown yeah. that he's developing into a star, and LaMelo Ball, who already is, right? Mm-hmm. So we have to wait with these guys a little bit more, but they're going to be groomed in the right, in the perfect, you know, championship DNA, baby.
Yeah. You know, my prediction is that at a certain point, Wiseman and Kuminga might be battling for playing time at center. You know, good problem to have, I suppose, but we'll see. We'll see. What were your impressions of the Nets?
Well, the Nets, you know, they didn't have Joe Harris, right? And they were missing one other player also. Who was that? The commentators were talking about it. And some guy named Kyrie Irving, too. That is the guy I was thinking about. Yeah. So I got the sense, I mean, they were saying that the Nets haven't beaten any teams, I think, over 500 or like teams with really very good records. I think the Nets are clearly like a work in progress. They might just kind of take it chill in the East and get the mm-hmm. second or third seed, because they're going to get that probably no matter what, simply by having Harden and Durant and Harris back. I mean, he's not comparable to Harden and Durant, but still, I think they're a total veteran team. So we're just going to have to see how they play in the playoffs. But I would imagine that they will be a championship contender, that they have as good a chance as anybody in the East of coming out of there because of their star power. And, you know, we were texting about this, like if Kyrie comes back, like, you know, who knows?
Hey, I want to see like the best basketball. So if Kyrie comes to his senses, I would love to see the Nets with Kyrie play the Warriors in the finals. But yeah, right now the Nets definitely aren't at full strength. And I was actually kind of down on them because now they don't have Kyrie. And I thought that the new rules are really going to screw Harden, the new foul free throw rules. Yeah. But clearly he's found a way around it, because he shot 11 free throws tonight, 10 for 11. And his ugly game, let me go off for a second. His ugly game was even uglier, because not only does he, before he used to get the foul calls, now he doesn't get them, and then he'll complain. And so he'll spend all this time complaining with his hands up in the air, and then eventually he'll get the foul calls. So I thought that was actually seriously going to hurt his game and thus the Nets' chances. But it looks like he figured a way around that, or they sent a memo to the league or something like that. So
yeah, two things on that. Like, one is he's shooting, I think Harden's shooting 5.5 free throws per year, I mean, per game on mm-hmm. average this year. And so he doubled that in this game. And so that is really, really frustrating and annoying, because what I was concerned that we could lose the game simply because, you know, he would just have so many like free throws, you know, and in a close game that could make the difference. And in the first quarter, it looked like that we were fouling too much, right? And he got to the line a lot, and other guys got to the line. The other thing is, last year we barely saw Kyrie, Harden, and Durant play together. That didn't happen much. So we don't, you know, we shouldn't assume that that would be the super team that I kind of assume it would be.
I felt the same way about Harden tonight. I was like, when the fouls kept coming against the Warriors and all of a sudden the Nets were in the bonus in the third quarter with like 6 minutes left, I was like, oh, come on. Okay, this is how it's gonna fall apart. But then all of a sudden there was a foul against the Nets on the next play, and then the Warriors were in the bonus too. So I was like, okay, we're good, you know, as long as that's even, which is great, because I've always felt during the Curry years where the Warriors haven't had that guy who can go to the basket and get fouls, that getting teams into the bonus is something that the Warriors are bad at, because they don't attack the basket. They don't get those fouls. Curry doesn't get to the line as much as he should, you know? Imagine if he got to the line, like, I think in Harden's MVP year, he averaged maybe 11 free throws a game, which is insane. Imagine if Curry averaged like 7 or 8. You know,
I mean, and part of that also is Curry is so skilled that he actually is able to get by guys like without sort of like almost wanting contact or whatever, initiating contact. Mm-hmm. I mean, Harden initiates the contact and then tries to get the foul based on that, and occasionally, you know, hits the shot. Right. Yeah. So he had that 4-point play, but then remember, he missed the fourth. He had the 3-point shot that he was fouled on, barely. I think it was by GP2.
I don't think he touched him, but yeah.
Yeah, I know. If at all, right? And then he missed, of course, ball don't lie.
I was waiting to say that.
Me too.
The thing on that, too, one more, is that you just contrast Curry's game with Harden's game. And this game told you everything, right? Harden spent like half the game like complaining with his hands up in the air, wanting free throws. And Curry just, you know, played like an electrifying, aesthetically pleasing, just beautiful basketball game, court game, you know, floor game all around.
That's, I mean, that guy is like the guardian angel of all things Warriors, you know. He's amazing. And then listening to him, you know, interviewed with the TNT guys right after the game, he's just like so chill and balanced and, you know, yet motivated and inspiring. I was just like, oh my gosh, you're awesome. I love you. You're the best. So, I mean, yeah, it's just the nature of his game. It changed the NBA, you know, and the guys, the Shaq and Kenny and Chuck, they were like, you know, maybe we should talk about Curry as the best player in the NBA. And then Kenny was like, I said that 2 days ago. And these guys were like, that's BS. You didn't say anything. You didn't say nothing. So it's easy to think that the most physically dominant looking player, right, who also performs to that level is the best player, or some, you know, amazing freak of nature, but also great, you know, all-time great player like Durant is. But I mean, what has Curry's impact on the game been? Now he's clearly the best player on the best team, right? Mm-hmm. So he's the engine that makes it all go.
Yeah.
I mean, if we didn't have him in this game, it would be a very different game.
I know. It's sometimes I catch myself taking him for granted a little bit. It's like, okay, Steph scored 30. How did Moses Moody do? Like, let me dive into the rookies.
0-for-2. Oh, God. Can't you do better than that?
Yeah. I'll say it right now, man. I think Bob Myers is going to be executive of the year. I think he would deserve it, because sometimes you guys get it just because their team is the best team or something. But in terms of picking guys in the draft and getting minimum free agents after getting rejected by, say, Patty Mills, who was on the Nets tonight, or Nicholas Batum.
Right.
Picking up Bielitsa, picking up OPJ and Andre Iguodala. He put this team together.
Iguodala, that's the key. I mean, you know, he just changed. He's just a vibe setter. He's a guardian of the team. I mean, it was great. You know, Curry basically talked after the game as if he was like, me, Draymond, and Andre, we got that championship DNA, and Clay's coming back. And so it was as if Iguodala never left. And that's what he looks like. He even hit that three. That was the craziest three at the end of the third.
Over KD.
Yeah, over KD. I was just like, this is a great night.
Yeah.
This is so much fun. And that's when I texted you. I was like, I'm having a blast. I didn't have much more to say.
And I always love thinking about the fact that when the Warriors lost Kevin Durant and then they convinced Brooklyn to make the trade, we got D'Angelo Russell and we lost Iguodala, but then D'Angelo Russell became Andrew Wiggins and Jonathan Kuminga, and then we got Iguodala back.
Yep.
So, you know, we don't have the pick that we sent out with Iguodala, but all good, man. All good. Our roster's full.
What a way to reload, right? I mean, we had to move to create the asset, right? And then somehow we managed to convince Minnesota to make that trade.
I feel like we'll finish this road trip 3-1. Yeah. I mean, Detroit is awful. And then Cleveland, they're better, but they're not that good. And I think Evan Mobley has an injury now. So, you know, he might be out. Or he's going to be after like a month.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a matter of like, you know, clearly we got up for this game. Clearly we're better than Detroit and Cleveland, but we're going to have to play that way, right? I mean, we're definitely better than Charlotte also.
Yeah.
Charlotte played a great game, but like we're going to have to play with strength, you know? And
yeah.
I mean, especially against Cleveland, Detroit might be the worst team, I think, in the NBA right now.
Oh, man, have you watched them at all?
I watched them a little. That's my basis for that claim.
So bad.
I don't even know what their record is. They were so bad.
It's so bad. Like it looks like a high school team right now. I'll save that for later.
I'm thrilled. I'm excited. You know, everybody stay healthy. I also think that the depth is going to allow us to rest, you know, Iguodala, yes. Otto Porter, maybe Bielitsa, some other players, you know.
And that's what's going to allow, you know, guys like Damian Lee and JTA to get minutes, especially as the season goes, because, you know, Clay's not going to come back in for a while, and he's not going to play 35 minutes and start running after the point guard.
You know? Did you hear the announcement that he's playing 5-on-5 now?
Yeah. No, that's big time. And, you know, I hope that they are very careful with him, because it's only been in 4 days. It'll be exactly a year. I think it was November 20th of last year on draft day where he tore his Achilles, but yeah, all things are pointing up. So, all right. Well, thank you, Ramesh.
Oh, that was so much fun.
Being back. Yeah, no, come back anytime, man. I enjoyed
it. We're 2-for-2 and two of the most fun wins of the year. I mean, the Lakers and beating Durant and Harden. I mean, it's like, those are like two of the teams I most want to beat too.
Absolutely, man. All right. Well, that is another episode of the Oakland Warriors podcast. Be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Feel free to hit me up on Twitter at Patrick Epino, E-P-I-N-O, or check us out at OaklandWarriors.com. The Oakland Warriors podcast is produced by National Film Society. Be sure to tell your fellow Warrior fan friends to tune in and listen. And the Oakland Warriors podcast is a part of the Basketball Podcast Network. And check out Ramesh at Ramesh Media on Twitter for his non-basketball takes. That's it.
Music in this episode provided by Paper Sun. Special thanks to Paul Amardo for production support. See you next time, and go Dubs.